Our Bishop Joe Vasquez has declared this coming year as the year of the domestic church. Now, Pope Francis just declared the coming year the year of St. Joseph. I think those things will fit together very, very nicely. And it couldn't come at a better time. And on top of all the other moral assaults that we've witnessed upon the family, now we have the coronavirus that's wreaked havoc on families. Churches have been closed or severely restricted. Work's been changed or even disappeared in too many cases. Public schools. They've seen drastic reductions in academic achievement, and parents are struggling to educate their children. The family has borne the burden of these crises. I can't remember seeing so much pressure upon families as we're experiencing right now. The domestic church that the bishop is calling us to recognize is the answer to these challenges. Even the universal church is under assault. Rome and the Vatican have been closed down much of the past year. Church attendance is down all over the world. Secular forces have attempted to blame the churches for spreading COVID. This is a lie, of course, but then secular forces have never been friendly to the church. You would have been proud of us Christmas Eve when we had the Christmas Eve Mass and the blessing of the baby Jesus is that the people were going to carry home and place in their mangers. We had about 1,000 people out here on the lawn, properly masked and socially distanced, and it was a beautiful display of faith, fidelity to the church, but of strength within our families in this parish that was unbelievable to observe. Without a strong domestic church, we wouldn't have a Catholic church. It's that simple. The universal church is built upon the church in the home. Domestic church is where we learn to pray and learn the context of our lives. If it doesn't happen at home, where will it happen? Public schools? No way. There's simply no equivalent to the power in our lives that we receive from the domestic church. That's where it happens. I wasn't born into a Catholic family. When I was 17 years old, I began to observe Catholic families. I was searching for something, and I began to observe just how powerful the influence of Catholic family can be. It surprised me from my Southern Protestant background. And I witnessed it up close in the life of a friend, a practicing Catholic. It dawned upon me that I wanted what he had. I thirsted and I was hungry for what he had received from his family. And as I looked around, I began to see a pattern in other families of practicing Catholics. They weren't perfect, but they worshiped together. They prayed together. And their family traditions were strong and they were uplifting. They had foundation and character that I had never known. I'm not criticizing my family. I'm saying there was a richness to a practicing Catholic family that I wanted, but I never knew. There was a problem. I wanted it, but I wasn't Catholic. So I began to take the equivalent of the RCIA classes, and I was baptized on my 18th birthday. And I began learning how to be a practicing Catholic. Now, you all know I'm a widower. I was married to a Catholic woman and also a convert. She converted before we were married. We have 6 children and now 18 grandchildren. Cynthia died young of cancer. But the two of us, former Protestants, formed a Catholic family. Perfect? No, of course not. But we had a compass to guide us. We had traditions to form. And we chose to be a practicing Catholic family. And it continues to be a blessing. Now, as a priest, I've experienced the ways that marriage and the sacraments make people better than they would have been without them. And most of the time, when two immature, crazy adults become enamored of each other, they say they're in love, and they marry, and they gradually become different. They become better versions of themselves as a result of their marriage. It changes people. It makes you better. And if they practice their faith, they hold themselves and each other to a higher standard than they might have otherwise lived, they learn to sacrifice, even suffer and mature in ways that two young enamored kids cannot imagine when they first start out. They share children and become the product of the sacrament of holy matrimony lived out in a growing family. They become servants of each other, and with time and patience and some struggle, they continue to be better versions of themselves. The Greeks had a word for it. They had many more words for the word love than we do. The word they used was agape. Agape is the word for love when it becomes other-serving. Being enamored in love pleases me. What marriage does, it turns that arrow around. And there's this strong need to please the other. That's agape. The other is more important than me. That doesn't happen up front. That takes time. That when the couple first married, they couldn't know the kind of love that they're going to experience years later. In my own experience, it was like falling ever more deeply in love with her, with our family. There is such a grace in this experience. God planned this. God blesses this kind of love. This is how God loves, loving the other. When Cynthia died, I tried to go back to being a single man, and I'll be honest with you, I couldn't do it. I couldn't live for myself, by myself, after 37 years of marriage. And after more than a year, I realized I needed to find a way to live my life in love again, because I couldn't do it as a single man. I wasn't looking to be loved again. I wasn't looking for another woman. There was another hole there, and I was looking for sharing my love openly, serving others. I couldn't envision my life going forward from that point as a single person, living just for myself. I spoke with our bishop at the time, and he sent me to the seminary. And I've discovered that the similarity of priesthood to sacramental marriage, it's amazing. It constantly amazes me how similar they are. There's nobody else in the bed beside me, but my days and my weeks, my years are filled with serving another like I did in marriage. I found love again. That's the way priesthood should be lived out. I still have my family. But I also have my church. I have my parish where I serve, and it's here where I learn to love again. Beautiful similarities. The domestic church taught me how to love. The domestic church is not simply a catchy phrase. It's a way of living our lives. It's not easy. It's never perfect, but it's perfecting us in ways that we could never achieve by ourselves, constantly drawing us out of our selfish, self-serving ways. From the book of Sirach, our first reading, we hear God sets a father in honor over his children. A mother's authority he confirms over her sons. When I married Cynthia in our early 20s, neither of us had any idea what this reading was all about. St. Paul taught, wives, be subordinate to your husbands as is proper to the Lord. Now, since the 1960s and the rise of the feminist movement, these have been fighting words. And if you ever want to have a fight, try and say those words out loud in front of a group of people. Many people stop listening. And they don't hear the very next lines that Paul says, husbands, love your wives and avoid any bitterness toward them. Paul was telling us how to make domestic church. Paul was teaching about agape for those who are listening to the words. Love is servants of one another, sacrificing, concerned for the other with shared values. That's what Paul was talking about. It wasn't a political statement. And the Holy Family is our example. And Mary and Joseph certainly faced adversity, even risks to their lives. And together they had to give up everything to protect and nourish their child. They were poor. They were migrants. But they shared a deep faith and a strong bond of unity and a sacred mission. Domestic church is our mission. That's where we learn to love. That's where we learn to change from self-serving love to agape.